the virtue of virtue and of temperance and of self-control. We see the virtue of it all through these eyes. Just as God, through Christ, decided to see our position through our eyes by becoming man. And so it is good for man to become man before we would become sons of God, because of the humility learned. God has given us a way that is good, a way by which we become the sons of God. And this is his way. You know, I can think of a lot of good reasons that justify it, but I'm not saying that those are the reasons or the only reasons, so to speak. They are among them, and good reasons. So it is not the will of God that those that believe on him should perish. God is, as Peter said, God is long-suffering to usward, that none of us should perish, but be its inheritors of eternal life. And us being the called, those who are chosen, those who are given faith to believe by God, it is those who believe on him. Those who believe in his name, in his true name, not in the sounds of a talismanic word or a few stories, but in the faith which Christ communicated by the gospel, to believe in that, to truly believe. And a lot of times when people start to believe, they don't even know what it is they're believing. And they haven't really believed as they ought to believe. Because oftentimes the whole story isn't given immediately. And we don't even know what we're believing in, except an idea, a very simple idea, from very humble beginnings. You remember this, that all this is there is in this, the possibility or the contingency that they would not inherit the kingdom. Much as the seed sown on thorny ground, or on, you know, the seed is sown into the stony ground, the thorny ground, it got choked out by the weeds and but the deceitfulness of riches and all that. But I mean the stony ground especially, because they immediately receive it with joy. There's a belief of sorts that comes about immediately. I generally choose to think of that as not true belief, but a superficial acceptance that does not penetrate deeply. So I cannot judge someone merely by what they say, but it's by seeing them endure that their true nature is revealed. Just like the parable of tares, but that at the harvest, when you see what the thing is brought forth, because the wheat and the tares, there's definitely a difference in the fruit. And that is easily distinguishable. Verse 15, but it's not a statement of universal salvation or of a universal desire on the part of God to save all. It means those who believe. It's already an exclusive club that whosoever shall believe on him, because believing on him is not something everyone can do. Verse 15, moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. If he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother. But if he will not hear thee, then take with thee one or two more, that in the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. And if he shall neglect to hear them, tell it to the church. But if he neglect to hear the church, let him be unto thee as an heathen man and as a publican. Verily I say unto you, whatsoever ye shall bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever ye shall loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Again I say to you, that if two of you shall agree on earth as touching anything that they shall ask, it shall be done of them of my Father which is in heaven. For where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. Now look at, now here we're talking about the idea of offenses again. Trespassing. A brother trespasses against me. Someone does something against you. What should you do? Hate him? Throw him into prison? Seek out your revenge? Well, according to Christ, you go and tell him. Look at, you are at fault. Between me and you. If he hears you, you've gained your brother. Isn't that wonderful? That's more than you could gain by any of those other options. Revenge and so on and so forth. Let him hear you. Unless he starts out, brother. If your brother will trespass against you. You know, because it is in our close relationships and those with whom we consider close, like brothers, whether it be in the faith or in blood, that these things begin to apply. And not to say that, oh, you know, if your neighbor trespasses against you, forgive him not. Or if, you know, because brother in Jesus' terminology means your fellow countrymen. But in Christianity, you know, those walls are broken down. There's neither Jew nor Greek, bond nor free. Jesus speaks to them in the language they understand of brother, because they were still very much Jewish and looked only on the people within their commonwealth of Israel as being worthy of this kind of treatment. And I do think also it is preeminent in believers to apply these things in the church, but also to anyone who seeks forgiveness. But this is, you know, let's say someone outside of the faith or outside of your inner circle trespasses against you. It may not be wise to even approach them, you know, like Jesus. When he was crucified, he didn't go and tell them their fault. He said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. He asked God to forgive them, whether God would forgive them or not. You know, a lot of times I think these things are read beyond the parameters that they're intended into something that becomes unreasonable. And not necessarily even righteous. You know, like I said about the binding and loosing. If I say to God, God, forgive my enemies. Is God bound by my will? No, I'm bound by his will. So I forgive based on the assumption of, well, if God forgives, I don't want to hold them guilty. But if I forgive, I don't necessarily expect God to hold them guiltless. It has to do with the brother. This is the foremost focus of everything that's being said here. And I'm with a mind of the binding and loosing. That's why I'm saying this, because